Endzone. Der DAZN NFL Talk.
Ja, dann hallo zusammen, Folge Nummer 65 hier bei unserem Podcast Endzone, der DAZN NFL Talk. Mein Name ist Flo Hauser, mir gegenüber, schräg daneben, wie auch immer, sitzt Christoph Stadler und wir haben heute ein bisschen was vor, denn Christoph, es fühlt sich ja nach der Free Agency und auf den Draft zu kommen immer so ein bisschen an. Ihr kennt das, ich habe es häufiger gesagt, wie auf der PlayStation, wenn man Madden zockt, und das ist genau das Thema heute eigentlich.
Ja, wir haben es ja schon ein kleines bisschen angekündigt, erstmal auch dir hallo, Flo Hauser, wir haben es ja, angekündigt, danke, dass wir uns ein paar Teams vielleicht diese Woche, nächste Woche raussuchen werden, bei denen es halt am spannendsten war. Und ich glaube, heute haben wir uns schon mit die vier spannendsten ausgesucht. Ich glaube, wir müssen nicht großartig spoilern. Man konnte es im Titel durchaus auch schon mal erkennen. Also wir schauen auch uns die Patriots an.
Wenn es nur drei sind, sei an der Stelle gesagt, das sind drei, nicht vier Teams.
Habe ich vier gesagt?
Ja, ja, aber macht nichts, alles gut.
Ich habe uns als Team noch formuliert. Oh, nein, es sind die Liebe. Patriots, es sind die Niners und die Seahawks. Das sind drei tatsächlich, drei Finger halte ich in der Luft. weil da wirklich viel positiv wie negativ, das kann ihr selber ja beurteilen, los war. Mhm. Über die werden wir dann sprechen, werden da mit jeweils Reportern von vor Ort auch sprechen. Die werden uns wirklich die Insights geben, was da los ist. Wir bekommen es ja doch aus der Entfernung mit, können da schon unseren Senf auch dazugeben. Aber die sind da tagtäglich bei den Teams, sprechen mit den Spielern, mit den Verantwortlichen. Das können wir logischerweise jetzt nicht so liefern. Aber umso besser, dass die ja mit uns sprechen bzw. gesprochen haben.
Genau so ist es. Also wirklich, das sind sehr, sehr spannende Gespräche. Dazu kommen wir gleich. Vorher müssen wir natürlich, weil ja auch nach wie vor sehr, sehr viel passiert, die neuesten Neuigkeiten in der NFL, die nicht direkt diese Teams betreffen, natürlich mal reinschauen.
Nicht die vier Teams, die ich gerade angesprochen habe.
Genau.
Niners, nur Patriots, Seahawks.
Genau. Sondern nur die anderen 29. So, also hier sind die neuesten Nachrichten.
Die News.
Ja, und die fetteste News war eigentlich, das ist auch die fast aktuellste, während wir hier Mittwochnachmittag bzw. abends in dem Fall aufnehmen. Die Cincinnati Bengals verlängern mit den beiden Wide Receivern. Sie haben einen neuen Nummer 1 Wide Receiver teuer bezahlt und sie haben auch ihren Nummer 2, oder wie Jamar Chase sagt, die Higgins ist Nummer 1A Wide Receiver bezahlt. Christoph, 44% des Cap Space für die kommende Saison der Cincinnati Bengals geht auf die Kappe von Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase und T. Higgins, denn die beiden Wide Receiver sind jetzt fett bezahlt worden.
Genau, Chase, ich lese jetzt mal deine Zahlen ab, die du aufgeschrieben hast. Ich habe es mir gar nicht notiert. 4 Jahre 161 Millionen und Higgins als Nummer 1B, Nummer 2 Receiver, 4 Jahre 115 Millionen.
1A bitte.
Ja. 1A. Ja. Entschuldigung, ich bleibe bei 1B. Ja, ist verdammt viel Kohle und nicht überraschend, oder? Dass er unterschrieb, also dass Chase unterschrieben hat, das war die Frage der Zeit. Man hat es ihm ja versprochen, du wirst der teuerst bezahlte Spieler, Nicht-Quarterback-Spieler werden. Das ist er jetzt. Herzlichen Glückwunsch. Ist es nicht die Überraschung, dass sie Higgins jetzt auch mit so fett Kohle bezahlen? War gar nicht mehr so überraschend, weil sie angekündigt haben, nachdem sie gefranchised-tagged haben, wir arbeiten dran, ihn langfristig zu halten. Aber es ist halt doch mehr, als du eigentlich bezahlen musstest, weil du halt so spät bezahlst. Wenn wir den Jefferson-Vertrag nehmen, da sind da doch ein paar Millionen Differenz dazwischen, bei Chase beispielsweise. Und jetzt hast du zwei teure Receiver, die stark sind, keine Frage. Aber eigentlich unnötig teuer geworden sind aus Bengals Sicht.
Ja, deswegen sage ich es gerne nochmal, 44% nur für diese drei Spieler mit Joe Burrow zusammen. So ein Team hat in der Regular Season dann
oder? Ich glaube nämlich, dass es dann für diese Vertragslaufzeit sind jetzt dann.
Genau, nur für das nächste Jahr.
Genau, sind es glaube ich ein Viertel oder sowas, glaube ich, sind es dann, was den jährlichen Durchschnitt betrifft, was auch viel zu viel wäre, um ehrlich zu sein.
Aber so ein Team, wie ihr wisst, es sind ja dann ein paar Spieler mehr, ne? Also dementsprechend fand ich das schon sehr, sehr krass. Aber mal gucken, hoffentlich bleiben sie gesund und dann zeigen sie jetzt dementsprechend auch was, weil ihr kennt das auch, wer bezahlt wurde, der lehnt sich dann erstmal auch mal zurück. Aber wir schauen mal.
Und sie wollen ja mit Trey Hendrickson auch noch.
Ja.
Also sie versuchen, Möglichkeiten auszuloten, mit ihm auch zu verlängern. Ich formuliere es mal ganz zurückhaltend, weil ich nicht weiß, wie das funktionieren soll, aber das war die Nachricht, wir probieren es, auch wenn er getradet werden könnte, wir probieren es trotzdem, ihn irgendwie auch fett unter Vertrag zu nehmen.
Und dann sind wir bei 50% wahrscheinlich fürs
nächste Jahr. Ich glaube, das wird dann nicht mehr ausreichen.
Also, fetter Payday dort bei den Bengals, fetter Payday auch für Cooper Rush. Wir haben so ein paar Backup-Quarterback-News, die können wir schnell durchgehen, aber ich fand's kurios, deswegen wollte ich es unbedingt ansprechen und noch deine Meinung hören. Cooper Rush ist der neue Backup von Lamar Jackson bei den Baltimore Ravens. 12,2 Millionen auf 2 Jahre. Fand ich zum einen irgendwie kurios, weil ich das Gefühl habe, passt er da überhaupt als Backup? Das ist so ein ganz anderer Typ. So, das ist schon mal das Erste. Und zweitens finde ich es für einen Backup auch gar nicht so günstig.
Ich finde es auch nicht so günstig. Ich meine, der war ja quasi an der Starter nach der Prescott-Verletzung bei den Cowboys. Aber ich habe ein bisschen irgendwie Probleme, ob das der richtige Spielertyp ist. Also sie wollen halt wirklich, wenn Lamar was probiert, dann komplett die andere Schiene gehen. Aber spannendes Signing, würde ich es mal bezeichnen.
Ja, also Huntley war ähnlicher Typ wie Lamar Jackson, aber genau, der klar nicht beweglichere. Ja, weil der war ja auch schon nicht so beweglich wie Lamar Jackson. Gut, wer ist das schon?
Wer ist das, ja.
So, aber das fand ich schon sehr interessant. Dazu gibt's noch ein paar andere neue Backups. Mac Jones ist jetzt bei den Niners, Jacoby Brissett bei den Cardinals und Mason Rudolph ist zurück bei den Pittsburgh Steelers. Da warten wir noch drauf, was da generell dann auf der Quarterback-Position passiert.
Ja, vor allem Rudolph, das gab's jetzt heute, nachdem es hieß, ist jetzt natürlich noch nichts Offizielles, aber die Vikings sind jetzt wohl nicht wirklich an Rodgers interessiert. Sprich, ja, damit bleiben für Rodgers nicht mehr so viele Optionen, außer die Giants und die Steelers. Und sollte er nicht zu den Steelers gehen, haben die einfach keinen Quarterback, außer Mason Rudolph. Und angeblich können sie sich vorstellen, mit dem zu spielen. Da muss ich mich auch noch kurz korrigieren. Letzte Woche, da bin ich ein Jahr zurückgeflogen in der Zeit. Die Giants haben natürlich den Nummer 3 Pick. Ich habe was von Nummer 6 Pick gesagt. Ah, ja. Das war letztes Jahr mit Malik Nabers.
Ja.
Natürlich haben sie Nummer 3 Pick, logisch.
Ja, da geht schon auf jeden
Fall. Und Mac Jones, da gab es ja schon mal frühe Gerüchte im Draft, dass der zu den Niners gehen könnte. Sie haben sich dann für Trey Lance entschieden. Mhm. Ich finde aber Mac Jones irgendwie, das finde ich passig. Das kann ich mir ganz gut vorstellen.
Also es wäre schon interessant gewesen, wenn der Draft damals anders gelaufen wäre. Wer weiß, wie die Sachlage jetzt wäre. Dann wäre Mac Jones wahrscheinlich der Franchise-Quarterback und Brock Purdy wäre nie gedraftet worden. Ne? Also das ist schon immer sehr interessant, so eine kleinen Dinge im Universum, die dann da passieren. Also ja, jetzt ist er trotzdem in Rot und Gold unterwegs. Dann haben wir noch einen Rekorddeal, Christoph. Der bestbezahlteste Defensive Back der Liga jetzt mit 30 Millionen pro Jahr. Das war ja kurz vorher noch J.C. Horn, der verlängert hat in dieser Offseason. Jetzt also Houstons Cornerback, Derek Stingley. Ich muss auch ablesen, 3 Jahre, 90 Millionen, das ist ein fetter Payday für ihn, berechtigt, ja, nein?
Ja, ich würde schon sagen, vor allem 89 Millionen sind garantiert, diese eine Million war dann, Millionen war nicht nötig zu garantieren. Es ist eine deutliche Steigerung, ich glaube 5 Millionen mehr dann als, ja logischerweise von 25 auf 30 dann quasi, was den Unterschied betrifft, als teuerster Defensive Back pro Jahr, aber ich glaube, diese Defensive der Texans, die wird brutal nächstes Jahr sein und Stingley ist da einer der besten, ja, glaube ich, ist vollkommen nachvollziehbar, oder?
Weiß nicht, wie absolut.
Aber absolut. Da habe ich jetzt keine Bedenken, ihm so viel Geld zu geben.
Hab's nicht kommen sehen, dass er dann so klar besser bezahlt wird.
Vielleicht 5 Millionen teurer ist im Jahr, hätte ich auch nicht gedacht, aber verdient sportlich gesehen.
Genau so ist es. Verdient auch einer bei den Texans, neu mit dabei, jetzt zumindest mal für ein Jahr unterschrieben. Das ist unser deutscher Kollege und Fullback Jakob Johnson, der tatsächlich jetzt da mal ein Jahr da ist. Jetzt nicht Practice Squad, sondern jetzt erstmal ein Jahr, aber das kann ja alles noch kommen dann in den kommenden Monaten. Aber an und für sich eine schöne Nachricht, dass er da jetzt erstmal ein Jahr theoretisch sein könnte.
Ja, glaube ich dann auch ganz okay, weil die Texans werden in der Division um die Playoffs mitspielen. Ich wünsche ihm einfach, dass es nicht so läuft wie bei den Giants, rein, raus.
Ja, das war
dass er einfach damit dabei ist.
Also Jakob, alles
Gute. Aber schön, dass er in der NFL bleibt, das ist eine schöne Nachricht.
Absolut richtig, an der Stelle alles Gute. Von uns beiden Vögeln auch. Und dann haben wir noch ein paar News mit aufgeschrieben von den Vikings. Harrison Smith, der nicht mehr allzu lange in der Liga wahrscheinlich dann spielen wird, hat jetzt nochmal um ein Jahr verlängert bei den Vikings. Gute 10 Millionen. Dazu
haben wir Story nochmal, oder?
Ja, genau. Ja. Der hat auch, glaube ich, nicht so den großen Markt angehabt. Der wollte auch einfach da bleiben. Dazu Jeff Okuda auch geholt, also die Vikings-Defense an und für sich. Nach wie vor ein spannendes Pflaster, würde ich mal behaupten.
Ja, ich glaube auch, das ist natürlich die Quarterback-Position, aber wenn es jetzt heute eben so dann reported wurde, dass ja mit Rodgers das vielleicht dann eben nicht wirklich eine Option war, je nachdem, was das mit J.J. McCarthy vom Fitness-Level her ist, wer dann der erfahrene Backup wird, aber Vikings sind schon wieder spannend. Ich finde, die machen gute Sachen.
Diese Saison absolut richtig,
Für das, dann, dass sie nicht so viele Optionen eigentlich haben, weil sie ja letztes im Draft wird nicht viel gehen, da haben sie ja viel letztes Jahr schon investiert.
Das stimmt. Zwei ehemalige Browns-Spieler haben auch einen neuen Club gefunden. Delvin Tomlinson, 2 Jahre, 29 Millionen zu den Arizona Cardinals und Juan Thornhill zu den Steelers, also zum Divisionsrivalen für die Secondary. Den findest du ja auch ganz spannend, dass der jetzt da bei den Steelers auftribbeln wird, ne?
Ja, ich finde, die Steelers machen es. Es ist nicht so viel. Ich muss mal kurz in meiner Liste nachschauen. Ist bei denen jetzt so viel passiert? Eigentlich nicht, oder? Bisher?
Es geht.
Bei den Steelers. Also da waren natürlich viele Abgänge mit dabei. Ja. Aber jetzt an neuen, du hast Gainwell, Slay, Thornhill. Ja, sind, und natürlich, klar, Metcalf DK, als Trade. Ja, aber ich meine, das ist von der Free Agency. Aber wirkt jetzt alles zumindest so passig, was sie an Leuten brauchen.
Mhm.
Ja. Thornhill, der von den Browns eher entlassen wurde, der hatte noch ein Jahr von seinem 3-Jahres-Vertrag für 21 Millionen Gesamtvolumen. Da kommen die Steelers jetzt deutlich besser und billiger davon.
Das stimmt. Und die Browns brauchen ja auch Geld. Aber naja, ist ein anderes Thema. So, dann apropos Geld machen. Bei den Eagles wurde der nächste belohnt, wenn man so will. Nämlich der Left Tackle Lane Johnson hat verlängert bis 2027, also nochmal ein Jahr obendrauf. Mhm. Das wurde alles ein bisschen umstrukturiert am Ende des Tages. Ich habe es mal versucht, erstens zu verstehen, als ich das alles gelesen habe, dass er insgesamt dann 25 Millionen mehr bekommt. Heißt, 48 Millionen werden jetzt über die nächsten zwei Jahre bezahlt. Davon sind 40 garantiert. Genau. Also er bekommt einfach mehr Geld mit der Verlängerung, eine Gehaltserhöhung, wenn man so will.
Genau, ist jetzt nicht bis 2026, sondern bis 2027. Mehr Garantien in den nächsten zwei Jahren. Und ich meine, einer der besten Right Tackle, wenn nicht sogar der beste Right Tackle, ist eigentlich aus Eagles Sicht ein No-Brainer.
Ja, absolut richtig. Dazu haben sie noch für die Defense Edge Aziz Ojulari geholt für ein Jahr, ehemaliger Giants-Spieler, immer ganz
gefällt mir gut.
Ganz ein gutes Jahr 4 Millionen
ist ein guter Deal.
Ja, genau, weil ein gutes Potenzial, finde ich. Mal schauen, wie der bei den Eagles werden wird. Und dann nach 15 Saisons jetzt aufgehört, das kam dann gestern, wir zeichnen Mittwochabend auf, Brandon Graham, der Defensive End, geht also in Rente, Super Bowl Champion mit den Eagles geworden, 15 Jahre oder 15 Saisons besser gesagt dort. Und es ist jetzt die Zeit geworden, hat er im Super Bowl noch mit Verletzung gespielt und jetzt kam dann einfach irgendwann der Punkt, an dem das Karriereende kommt.
Ich glaube, wir können es da ganz leicht machen. Es gibt zwei, glaube ich, dann Franchise-Player. Das ist Brandon Graham und Jason Kelce. Da kann man sich drüber streiten, wer der noch größere Franchise-Player ist. Mit den meisten Spielen über 200, 206. Jetzt im Super Bowl eben nochmal zum Einsatz gekommen. Da ist er zurückgekommen nach der Verletzung. Auch irgendwie, glaube ich, ein schönes Karriereende. Zweimal Super Bowl gewonnen. Da geht ein ganz, ganz großer. Wirklich ein ganz, ganz großer.
Ja, absolut. Der immer so ein bisschen im Schatten stand, aber der krass, also was heißt im Schatten stand, aber ne, nicht so auffällig war, aber sehr, 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 sehr geiler Spieler.
So ein bisschen aber auch so Jason Kelce. Ich meine, er ist jetzt zuletzt natürlich durch seine Medienaktivitäten auch noch mehr in den Mittelpunkt gekommen, durch die Bruderschaft mit Travis Kelce natürlich auch, aber die haben halt auch ihren Job immer gemacht.
Ja. Dann haben wir noch zwei Spieler, Christoph, da hattest du mich nochmal darauf aufmerksam gemacht, weil ich vergessen habe, es aufzuschreiben, die für 6 Spiele gesperrt wurden, obwohl sie ja gerade neu irgendwo hingekommen sind. Ich sag mal so, ist natürlich auch dann eher bitter gelaufen für die Herrschaften Larry Ogunjobi und Michael Hirsch, ne?
Genau, Mike Hoyt und Larry Ogunjobi sind zu den Bills in der Offseason. Haben wir schon drüber gesprochen. Zwei gute Deals, wie ich finde, passt wunderbar. Ja. Aber die haben gegen diese Performance Enhancing Drugs Policy verstoßen. Ja. Also sind für 6 Spiele jeweils gesperrt. Bei Hoyt wusste Buffalo Bescheid, dass der gesperrt wird. Bei Ogunjobi aber nicht. Da war es dann wohl wirklich so, als man ihn gesigned hat, kam das dann auch so mehr oder weniger zeitgleich raus, dass der auch 6 Spiele fehlen wird. Also sie kommen zurück im Laufe der Saison, aber wie du es gesagt hast gerade, kein optimaler Start für beide, weil ich glaube, die könnten durchaus schon auch eine tragende Rolle spielen in dieser Defensive. Aber halt erst ab Woche 7. Ich habe jetzt den Spielplan nicht auswendig im Kopf, aber
weiß ich auch nicht.
Haben sie davor schon eine Bye-Week?
Ich weiß es nicht, kann ich dir nicht sagen. Such du mal raus, wenn du möchtest.
Aber auf jeden Fall.
Ja, es ist so oder so doof. Ja, wenn du magst. Also ich meine, es ist wie in einem normalen Wirtschaftsunternehmen. Ich gehe in ein neues Unternehmen und stell direkt was an, dann werde ich in der Probezeit eigentlich gekündigt.
Haben wir ja noch gar nicht, wie Dödel. Der wird die Gegner.
Ja, was für eine Pfeifen, ey. Also das ist so, als würde ich in der Probezeit direkt was anstellen, dann fliege ich wieder raus. Oder ich unterschreibe beim neuen Unternehmen und sage direkt zum Chef, hallo, ich hätte gern 6 Wochen Urlaub. Also das ist schon alles ein bisschen doof gelaufen, definitiv.
Genau, wir warten dann, schauen darauf, wann die Bye-Week ist, wenn der Spielplan rauskommt. Das war ein kleiner Hinweis. Ganz kurz noch schnell noch eingeschoben. Ja. Die Falcons haben Kirk Cousins jetzt in ihrem Roster behalten. Heißt, er bekommt einen 10 Millionen Roster-Bonus für 2026. Das ist jetzt garantiert für Cousins. War durchaus interessant, dass sie den Weg gehen wollen. Also das geht dann weiter. Diese 10 Millionen würden weitergehen, wenn er getradet werden würde zu einem anderen Team. Dann würde der Roster-Bonus mitgehen. Aber bei denen wissen wir immer noch nicht so genau, was sie eigentlich vorhaben mit Cousins. Ja.
Das stimmt. Da gibt's dann vielleicht spannende Einblicke. Das wurde auch gestern announced. Die Quarterback-Doku von den Kollegen bei Netflix ja mit Joe Burrow, Jared Goff und eben Kirk Cousins. Also das ist dann auch interessant, wenn da die nächste Staffel losgeht. Und dann haben wir noch eine News, die Patriots betreffend, haben jetzt den Center. Genau, wir
gehen eigentlich schon jetzt in unseren Hauptpart heute, oder? Mit den drei, wie ich sagen würde, 4 Teams.
Ja, genau.
Drei Teams.
Genau.
Dass wir auf die Patriots, Niners und Seahawks schauen und starten mit den Patriots. Und genau, da ist nämlich was passiert.
Ja, oder so. Machen wir es so.
Nee, also gerne nochmal Garrett Bradbury. Das ist ja das, was du noch sagen wolltest. Ich wollte nur kurz einleiten, dass wir jetzt zu unseren drei Teams wechseln.
Du wolltest quasi einleiten für mich. Okay, verstehe.
Will meinen Vierer vom Paar wieder gut machen.
So, sehr gut. Also Center Garrett Bradbury, der von den Vikings ja entlassen wurde, hat einen Tag später dann bei den Patriots unterschrieben für 2 Jahre bis zu 12 Millionen, knapp 4 garantiert. Und das ist eine News, die wir natürlich mitnehmen wollen in das Gespräch jetzt mit Christopher Price vom Boston Globe, von der Zeitung, wie man früher gesagt hat.
Vor allem, das ist ein spannendes Signing. Es hat sich so ein bisschen angedeutet, aber der war echt schwach im Pass-Blocking. Finde ich dann doch relativ viel Geld bis zu 12 Millionen, wenn er das bekommt. Wobei 3,8 garantiert ist nicht so schlimm, aber ob das wirklich ein Upgrade ist, weiß ich nicht.
Ja, wir werden sehen. Auf jeden Fall ist das einer, den sie ja brauchen für diese O-Line. Protect Drake May heißt es ja immer. Beschützt deinen jungen Franchise-Quarterback und das soll auch Thema sein in dem Gespräch, was jetzt kommt.
Ja, Christopher, or we can say now, Chris, the Patriots had been one of the most interesting, maybe the interesting team because they had the most money to spend. How do you see the free agency so far? How would you rate the free agency of the Patriots? Because we knew there is something going on. There will happen a few free agency signings.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think by and large, I would give them relatively good grades defensively. They went out, they got guys like Milton Williams and Robert Spillane and Carlton Davis, and they addressed a number of issues that they had over the last couple of years. The one question I have, if I'm a Patriots fan going forward, you spent all this money on the defensive side of the ball. Really, you haven't spent a whole lot on offense. And part of that is because there weren't a lot of fits at areas of need. The two guys that they really would have loved, Ronnie Stanley, a left tackle, ended up going back to Baltimore. And then Chris Godwin, a wide receiver, ended up re-signing with the Buccaneers. So it's been good on the defensive side of the ball. But I think when you talk about a team-building perspective, this group still has a lot of work to do when it comes to the draft and maybe some trades as well, if they want to get to where they ultimately want to be as a team heading into the 2025 season.
The big topic for me especially was, of course, to protect Drake May, maybe also through free agent signings. And now you got two new offensive linemen, like the newest Garrett Bradbury, the ex-Vikings player center, and Morgan Moses. And you said they need a little more in the offense, maybe also the offensive line. How do you see these two guys, and what do you think maybe could happen? Because Ronnie Stanley, everybody was behind him.
Exactly, it's tough. It was funny. At the Combine, Coach Vrabel said that, sometimes it's like when you go to when you want to go buy a car, sometimes if there's only one car, you might have to overpay. And I think they kind of tried to overpay with both Stanley and Godwin. Godwin's a different matter altogether, but they need a left tackle, to put it as bluntly as possible. They don't have a left tackle.
It is the biggest need, isn't it?
Really, yeah. They had a stopgap there last year in a guy in Vidarian Lowe who was okay, who did as well as could be expected, but they need more help. You know, to your point, Drake May is the franchise. Drake May is the future. You need to do whatever you can do to protect him, because as we've seen over the years, a great offensive line makes a bad quarterback good and a good quarterback great. And particularly when you're working with a young quarterback, you need to do everything you can do to set him up for success. They need to continue to reinvest in that offensive line. There's a lot of talk here that, you know, they have the fourth pick in the draft, that they might go after a tackle. Mm-hmm. There are still a couple of guys out there in free agency, most notably Cam Robinson, who might be a fit for them. They could also end up pulling off a trade. I don't think, at least here in New England, we're talking enough about the potential for a trade for someone. But they really need to continue to add to that offensive line. I think they did well picking up Garrett Bradbury and Morgan Moses, but they need to continue in that direction again if they want to get to where they want to be.
You mentioned Ronnie Stanley. Was there a, let's say, realistic chance to sign in New England? Because I had the feeling he could leave Baltimore. I wasn't surprised that he stays in Baltimore, but I had the feeling it could happen this year with a lot of money to spend.
Yeah. I think that there was a chance. I don't know how realistic the chance might be or might have been. Because as we saw with Chris Godwin, the Patriots were in a position where they had to overpay guys if they wanted to be competitive. And so you saw them offer an extra $20 million to Chris Godwin. He ended up eventually, going back to the Buccaneers. So I think some of that, a little bit of that, was in play when you talk about a guy like Ronnie Stanley. I think they were willing to overpay. But yeah, they need to continue. Like I said before, they need to continue to work to be able to do the best job possible when it comes to protecting their young quarterback. And I don't think they've done that to this point, particularly on offense. Again, I think they did well on defense, but offense, the offensive line, it's still lacking as we sit here in mid-March.
And do you think, because you said it a few times with the overpaying, that with all the other free agents, especially in the defense, I mean, they're quite good guys like Spillane and Milton Williams. Is it a valuable price, or do you think it's like too much they gave up because everybody knew they have money, of course, to spend?
Yeah, I think they had to overpay a little bit. I think a lot of those were overpays. Now, that being said, they also got guys who are, and I'm going to put up my quote fingers here, high character guys. Guys that Mike Vrabel had talked about who are culture guys, who are locker room leaders, Morgan Moses, Spillane, Carlton Davis. These are guys who other guys want to play with, guys who are going to be at a premium. They're not high-end guys like the T. Higgins types who are going to demand, you know, $30, $40 million a year. But these are very important guys to have in your locker room when you're trying to build a championship culture. And so I think you had to overpay for some of those. But you're not just going to see the dividends on the field in terms of play compared to what you saw last year, but you're going to be able to see some guys who want to play alongside Spillane, Morgan Moses, Carlton Davis, Milton Williams. Those guys are investments not only on the field, but off the field when you talk about building a championship culture in Foxborough.
I mean, it was for sure the expectation you can't get the turnaround with one free agency. You need a draft, maybe another free agency, depends on what's going on this year, especially out of the wide receiver position is from my side a big need because we talk about Drake May. He had a fantastic first campaign. I was completely surprised. I never expected that kind of season, but who's going to catch his balls this season? To be honest, there's not a big change. Gordon would be great. Higgins would be great, but for obvious reasons, they didn't come to the Patriots.
Yeah, they really haven't. And again, part of that is just because of the landscape out there. Other than Higgins, there wasn't, and I think we're seeing this now as we see the second wave of free agency, there wasn't really a robust middle class at either one of those positions. They were either really super high-end guys or guys who could kind of help bolster the middle to the back of the roster. The one guy who offensively, amongst the skill position guys who they added, who I really like, is Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins is a guy who was in Buffalo last year, an absolute lunatic in the best possible way. He's That's a true. Gonzo special teamer. If you Google Mac Hollins in pregame fit, he has some of the most interesting fashion choices. Let's just put it that way. He showed That's up true, in game man. Last year dressed as Animal from the Muppets. He yeah. keeps things loose. He always practices or he tries to work out in bare feet. He's a guy who's been around for a while. And when you talk about a wide receiver room, it's kind of tightened up a little bit. You know, this is a group of young guys who are really not loose in the manner in which they need to be loose. And I think if you introduce a guy like Mac Hollins into that environment, I think it can be a good thing. But yeah, they don't have a number one receiver, an X receiver, a guy who threatens the defense really in a lot of ways. And, you know, maybe that conversation up, I'll say this, a lot of the conversation up here is about them, you know, if Travis Hunter falls to four, maybe Travis Hunter is a part-time wide receiver for this team. Maybe Tet McMillan, the kid out of Arizona. Yep. You end up trading back a little bit. I think he would be a little bit of an overdraft if you took him at four. But let's say they traded back to six and they had a pick swap with the Raiders and they picked up a day two pick from the Raiders to kind of drop back a little bit. Well, then maybe Tet McMillan is the answer there at number six. So, again, we talked about the offensive line. Incomplete, really, I think, at this stage of the offseason. You could say the same thing about the wide receiver core as well.
But then it's for sure the draft. Sorry, Flo. The draft will be... Depends on which number they pick, but it should be a tackle or a wide receiver.
I think that's the same. But look, they went, and I wrote this the other day. This is a cheap plug for my work in the Boston Globe. You can find me on the Boston Globe, bostonglobe.com. But they invested so heavily on the defensive side of the ball in free agency. I don't think they have a choice other than to look at the offensive side of the ball in the draft. And whether that works or doesn't, you know, I don't know. But I think when you look at some of the options that they're going to have when it comes to the draft, when they're picking it for, they're picking at the top of the second round, they have, I think it's four picks in the top 100. there's going to be some options there, and there's going to be some competition on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I think they're at a point now where they have to go offensive tackle or offensive line and wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have 2 third-round picks as well, one from the Falcons and number 4 and the 4th in the second round. But you mentioned it before, they're looking always also like leaders for the team, especially in the defense, but also at the wide receiver core. I mean, the wide receiver class, as you mentioned, also is pretty good or pretty nice in this draft. But is there somebody with leadership, or do you think somebody of these young guys can be the number one X-factor wide receiver? Because I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that there is a typical number one wide receiver on the roster as we sit here right now. Now, there's some conversation about a potential trade with the 49ers for Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. I think if Brandon Ayuk came to New England, he would be the number one wide receiver without a doubt.
So you're hearing the rumors already again?
Yeah, again. Yeah. We call it the silly season. And so, yes. You know, it's just, you know, no trade is considered absolutely ludicrous or off the board at this point. But yeah, they don't have a number one wide receiver. Now, you can look at that offense and you could say, well, maybe we could look at, you know, if Kendrick Bourne is healthy, you know, he can come back and catch 50, 60 balls. You know, Pop Douglas, is a worthwhile option. You know, he could be a number one wide receiver, but they don't have a guy. Again, before, I'll go back to the definition I had before. They don't have one guy in that wide receiver group that threatens a defense, that makes a defensive coordinator say, boy, how are we going to stop him? What are we going to do? We have to be able to figure out a way to stop so-and-so. They don't have that on this offense. You know, they've improved, and they've shown that, you know, they're bringing in some guys, but they don't have that bona fide number one guy, at least at this stage.
Could be a change, but true.
Yeah. And again, that's why I think there is something to the idea of them, you know, maybe trading back and taking McMillan. I really like McMillan. He's got great size, got great hands. He's fast. He played really well last year. If you go back and look at the numbers, he played really well on a lousy Arizona team. Mm-hmm. And so you could look at him, maybe not in 2025, but you could look at him as a 1,000-yard guy. And I think that would be a huge help to this offense, and Drake May in particular. The other thing, too, we talk about leadership, and I think it's important in the context of this conversation. I am curious. This is going to be a huge year for Drake May, obviously on the field. But I'm going to be interested, if you lose guys like David Andrews and Jonathan Jones and Dietrich Wise, that creates a real leadership void in that locker room. And I'm wondering if Drake May is going to be able to put that on his shoulders in his second year in the league and be more of a leader and be more demonstrative. I think that the expectation is fair that he should be able to kind of step up and be more of a leader going into 2025. And that's not just on offense, but defense as well. To be that kind of that guy in the locker room that is the unquestioned, one of the unquestioned leaders of that team.
On the other hand, with Mike Vrabel, now you have a new boss in town, a very strong head coach. I wouldn't say Jared Mayo won't be a strong head coach in the future, but he wasn't, maybe not in the first year in New England. How do you see Mike Vrabel so far? I mean, it's a, I wouldn't say complete change, because he's familiar with the Patriots, but now we have the, let's say, big number on the coaching position.
Yeah, I think it's you bring up Vrabel, and I think when you talk about the difference between the two, I think personality figures into it. Vrabel has a big personality. Vrabel has some swagger. Vrabel has some brashness to him that maybe didn't exist with the previous coaching staff. And I think that can attract some guys. I think guys like playing for that. Look, and we saw the case with Mayo too. Guys like playing for guys who have been in the league as players, because there's a connection that they have there that I don't think exists unless you are like Bill Belichick and had great success in the league for a long time.
Sure.
I think Mike Vrabel can connect with guys on a level that, you know, maybe a lot of guys can't. The other thing too, and look, I enjoyed covering Gerard Mayo when he was the head coach in New England, but I don't think he was set up for success ultimately. I think that they made some personnel decisions. They made some decisions above his head that I think ended up torpedoing his chances for success long-term as a head coach. But Vrabel's different. Yeah, Vrabel's got a little bit of attitude to him. And I think guys like that. And I think we're already starting to see results when you talk about, you know, the Patriots moving forward into 2025, how they're going to operate.
Mm-hmm. That would have been my next question, because Mike Vrabel, it looks like that he's involved in much more than normal head coaches, and of course more than Mayo was. But with all this being said, what do you think, or what do you expect then from this season? I mean, okay, it's mid-March. They have a few needs left, as we learned already. But is there also a change in the scheme or in the play style Mike Vrabel bringing into it to the Patriots?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of changes on the defensive side of the ball. Traditionally, for a long time under Belichick, and really to a lesser extent under Mayo, the defensive linemen were more about occupying space and freeing things up for the linebackers to be able to move around and make plays. We've already seen it by the decision to sign Milton Williams. They're keeping their fingers crossed on Christian Barmore. They brought in Tonga. Some of these guys who they brought in, and then simultaneously they kind of shed themselves of some other guys. It's about much more of an attacking defensive front. You're going to see guys who are going to be disruptive. I think that's the key phrase when you talk about the New England defensive line. He wants disruptive guys. And the new defensive coordinator, Terrell Williams, wants disruptive guys, as opposed to the defensive lineman up front, again, kind of occupying space so linebackers can make plays. He wants the defensive line to be able to have a role in that as well. So they're going to be swings and misses when they get in the backfield, you know, to use a baseball term here. But you're going to see Milton Williams go after the quarterback. You're going to see Christian Barmore go after the quarterback more. Theoretically, if that all works, then you're also going to see Keon White do a little bit more when it comes to from a pass rushing standpoint than he's done over the last couple of years. So really, I think the biggest changes are going to manifest themselves on the defensive side of the ball, the attacking scheme, the way he wants to go about getting after quarterbacks. It's a lot like Mike Vrabel as a player, honestly.
I think it will be an interesting season for the Patriots. Also, we have to wait for draft for sure. Tackle, wide receiver, I think they will address this in the draft, but it sounds very interesting, very exciting, much more exciting than the last season.
Yes, it does.
Hopefully for you.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'll say this. As a reporter, you just root for an interesting team. You don't necessarily root for the team. And they were interesting the last couple of years.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, not just in the way that the fans wanted. So I'll also say this, too, that it can be a fool's errand sometimes to kind of look forward based on last year's schedule, because things change, coaches changes, personnel, all that. But you look at the schedule moving into 2025 for the Patriots as opposed to the one that they faced in 2024. This schedule looks a lot easier. Mm-hmm. 2024, they went to London. They had multiple trips to the West Coast. They played in Chicago. This year, 2025, almost everything is on the East Coast. There's very little travel comparatively, and they're also matched up against one of the weakest divisions in football, at least in 2024, in the NFC South. They play the Panthers next year. They play the Saints. They play the Falcons. These are games, these are winnable games, even for a Patriots team that's coming off a four-win season. So you look at the schedule, you look at some of the changes that they made, and I'll go back to what Mike Vrabel said when he was first hired. He talked a lot about just, taking advantage of bad football. Last couple of years, this Patriots team lost, I think it was 11 games by one touchdown or less. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you look at this team in 2025, they win half those games, they're going to be in really good shape. I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs in 2025, but the expectation is, given the changes, given the schedule, given the way they're approaching this season and the continued, fingers crossed if you're a Patriots fan, maturation of someone like Drake May puts you in a position to have more success in 2025 than you had in 2024 and 2023.
So maybe the last quick question is for me, how do the fans see all of this? Because they were used to having a dynasty, they were used to having Super Bowl rings, now they are used to having bad seasons in the last years. And of course, the rebuilding process began 3 years ago, if you want to say it's like this. How is the atmosphere right there in Foxborough and Boston? And what is your opinion about the fans as a reporter there?
I think there's some cautious optimism at this point. I'll say that. There is a belief that, hey, they've had a couple of really rough years. And honestly, I mean, I just talked about this with someone else, that it's been 5 years this week since Tom Brady left, and they haven't won a playoff game. And that is weird if you're a Patriots fan who grew up 20 years of nothing but success. Look, my son's 20 and he's been to like 8 championship parades. And I just, and it's just, and that's just the way it was. I'm not just talking about the Patriots, but it's just like, that's just the way it was
for
New England for such a long time. And I think it's taken some time to kind of get used to the new reality of the National Football League and having to kind of look up and see all these teams as they're as the Patriots are at least theoretically continuing to kind of rebuild. Again, I think ultimately the fan base is relatively optimistic about some of the changes, but look, we could talk again in November and, you know, and if they're 3-12, people are going to be calling for a new head coach and new changes. So I guess as the old head coach said, it is what it is.
Yeah. So we take the cautious optimism. I think that's a great phrase for the Patriots, because it could be an interesting season for sure. Chris, thank you very much for the insights. Looking forward to what's happening in New England and Boston.
My pleasure. Take care, guys. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Ja, also die Patriots sicherlich eine der spannendsten Mannschaften, weil sie halt viel Geld für einen Williams, für einen Landry, für einen Carlton Davis, also schon auch gute Spieler geholt haben. Einfach mal ein paar jetzt schnell aufgezählt. Bisschen anders schaut es dann bei unserem zweiten Team aus, bei den San Francisco 49ers. Da ging es eher drum, oder wird es drum gehen, die Abgänge zu kompensieren. Da haben wir auch noch zwei News. Kyle Juszczyk, der Fullback, wurde entlassen, floh, um dann doch wieder zurückzukommen. Ist jetzt für 2 Jahre und 8 Millionen wieder da, 7 Millionen garantiert. Wie gesagt, der war eigentlich entlassen. Ein paar Tage später ist er wieder da. Also das habe ich überhaupt nicht verstanden, was da die Idee war. Geld sparen, dann doch kein Geld sparen. Komisch.
Ja, das war echt sehr merkwürdig. Das werden wir auch gleich mit dem Kollegen besprechen. Aber ich habe ja gesagt, aber das ist so die Identifikationsfigur einer der wenigen, auch wenn er nur Fullback spielt. Aber suffisant gesagt, das ist der Thomas Müller der San Francisco 49ers. Und das war dann schon irgendwie sehr merkwürdig, weil den dann wegzuschicken, fand ich, es war eine Überraschung, auch wenn die Position nicht mehr so wichtig ist, nenne ich es jetzt mal.
Doch wieder. Ich weiß es nicht. Ich weiß nicht, was sie da vorhaben.
Ja, ganz komisch. Und Jordan Mason ist dann jetzt auch nicht mehr da. Das kann man vielleicht nochmal mitgeben als News.
Genau, der Running Back, der ist zu den Vikings gegangen. 2 Jahre, auch da bis zu 12 Millionen möglich. Über 7 Millionen sind auch garantiert. Die tauschen nochmal Picks. 2025, San Francisco bekommt noch einen 6. Runden-Pick für 2026. Und ja, die Niners eben mit einem großen Aderlass jetzt in dieser Free Agency. Und wir haben sprechen mit Jake Hutchinson, den kennt er schon. Vor 2 Jahren haben wir mit dem auch schon mal gesprochen, vom Super Bowl. Der ist beim Radio in der Bay Area tätig, als Reporter natürlich für die Niners. Auf YouTube findet er ihn. Aber der kann uns sicherlich ein paar ganz spannende Insights bringen zu den Niners und einer schwierigen Offseason bis hierhin. Ja, we're back with Jake, who had been here, what was it, 2 years ago, before the Super Bowl. To be honest, at the moment for the Niners, Jake, it doesn't feel like a Super Bowl season, or is it different in the Bay Area?
No, that's the feeling. That's the feeling is their stated goal seems to be, they're trying to copy what the Rams did a few years ago, where the Rams had a lot of older players, and they said they were going to do sort of a mini reset, where they'd keep some of their key guys like Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford, but a lot of the guys they got rid of. And the 49ers are kind of trying to do the same thing where they're keeping George Kittle and Fred Warner and ideally Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey and Nick Bosa. But a lot of the older guys, they're just saying they're eating a lot of their money instead of, you know, in the NFL, you can restructure money and you can get creative with it. They're doing it where they're eating all that money up front and they're basically building entirely through the draft. They're trying to get younger and they're not, you know, completely punting this season. They still want to compete a little bit, but they're not Super Bowl contenders by any stretch of the imagination. This feels like a sort of building year to 2026 where they have a younger roster and can maybe compete and add free agency, you know, next cycle.
So your feeling is, of course, no Super Bowl contender, but it seems like you're kind of positive because they're not trying to be the new New Orleans Saints. Like they are leaving.
Hopefully
this.
Nobody wants to be the New
Orleans Saints. Yeah, of course. But this is the problem. You see that the roster was full of stars and it was a pretty nice roster, of course. And now you have to let them go. And of course, in this free agency, a lot of guys went away. Are you optimistic that this is a good plan that 49ers have in getting younger and saving money and not just overpaying everybody just they can stay there?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like and there's a lot to criticize. There is what you can appreciate is that they've been very bad in free agency in past years, and they've overspent on players like Javon Hargrave, guys who are over the age of 30 who run into injury issues. And this free agency cycle has been outrageous. The amount of money spent on players who aren't star caliber has been ridiculous. So I don't criticize them for letting a lot of their players walk. I think a lot of them were overpriced and overpaid. But I do think they missed out on some sort of lower to mid-tier guys where they still have problems at defensive tackle. They don't have a capable linebacker next to Fred Warner. They need another cornerback. They need receivers now with Debo gone and Brandon Ayuk recovering. So there's a lot of positions I think they could have filled cheaply that they have decided not to do. While I respect their approach and sort of I think they are building towards a 2026 and they're going to be set up for future success where they can, you know, be creative with money and be more active in free agency. They haven't replaced any positions of real need. And I think they've probably gone a little bit too far in terms of, you know, getting rid of all these guys and saying, all right, we're financially constrained. When in the NFL, the salary cap goes up, you know, something like $20 to $25 million every year. So you can be creative and keep creating money if you want to. That's not how they've chosen to do it. I think it is a sound plan. I think they've gone a little bit far with it, in my opinion.
It is interesting because I think everybody in the Bay Area expected this day will come, but maybe not this year. Okay, we have the Brock Purdy contract on horizon, but this, let's say, point of no return, I didn't expect it now, to be honest.
No, none of us really expected it. And it does feel like ownership, Jed York, does feel like they have made sort of a statement to the 49ers front office that, hey, you've given out a lot of bad contracts. We have a lot of aging players, and you doubled down last year. And part of it was the Brandon Ayuk contract where they were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, and then Kyle Shanahan, you know, he met with Brandon Ayuk one day as John Lynch was on the phone trying to trade him. And Kyle Shanahan ran into John Lynch's office saying, don't trade him, don't trade him, don't trade him. And then Brandon Ayuk signed this massive deal after being, active on social media and holding out. And I think that rubbed them the wrong way because Brandon Ayuk got hurt and now they're stuck with this, big contract that there are ways to get out of it, but it's a big contract and they should have probably traded him. And so I think
this offseason?
Yeah. So he could be traded this cycle, but they would cost them a lot of money, which they seem content to, pay a lot of money for players who don't pay for them. but it does seem like ownership has been frustrated with that contract and the idea of losing these contract negotiations as opposed to just, getting the best players for the right price.
And how do you feel about maybe a little insight, if you have one, from the Brock Purdy and also George Kittle situation? Because this you have always to have in the back of your head and your mind regarding also this free agency and maybe upcoming free agencies, because both of them, if they want to stay and if they stay, wants to earn some money, of course.
Yeah, it feels like with the Brock Purdy situation, they're trying to make a point of, with Nick Bosa and Fred Warner and Debo and Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams and all these guys, they got paid top of market deals and the 49ers feel like they lost, which is not really how a team should be looking at it. You should be looking at, what's the best deal for this player, not did we win or lose the negotiation. But I think they're trying to make a point with Brock Purdy's deal where, they could probably have negotiated it already. Like the window has been open for nearly a month now. And I think they're trying to make a point of we're not going to pay him the top of market. Or if we do, they're going to get creative with how they structure it so that, they can escape the deal in a few years. I do think they will end up paying him. And I do think the number is going to be ridiculous. It'll say $55 million or something like that. But that's not really like how it'll work. It'll be, $20 million and 25 and 30, and it'll increase over the years. But I do think they're trying to make a point. And, the 49ers don't seem like they've learned their lesson where they let these deals linger late into the offseason. And then players don't have training camp or there's weird holdouts. And you go into the season where, And maybe that's part of, you know, getting rid of all these players is they don't expect to compete. So they're just going to get a really good negotiation on the Brock Purdy deal. But I wouldn't say that's the most sound way to do business. And it doesn't really build goodwill with your team.
So the experience, sorry, Christoph, in the past from the front office in this negotiation, it's a pretty hard word for our German guys. You know what I mean? Is the problem that the contract extensions seem to be stuck at this time?
It seems like it's slow. And the 49ers mm-hmm. have a habit of opening negotiations and then shutting the door for a while. Like, you know, Brandon Ayuk said he didn't hear from them for months. So sometimes they don't even talk until it's through the draft. Players hear nothing from them. Like Kyle Juszczyk, who they cut and then re-signed on a weird two-year deal.
Story. That would be one of my questions later, but it's a strange story. But sorry.
Yeah. But like he didn't hear from them and he's like, all right, they're not going to cut me. And then the day before they're like, no, we will. So they don't communicate all that well. And part of that is to sort of keep players in the dark and just, I guess, to get leverage. But I would say it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of movement on Brock Purdy's contract right now. And that might be something where they wait until the draft and how that all pans out. But it doesn't seem like anything is imminent tomorrow.
And that would be my question. Do we have a feeling when we can get this Brock Purdy sign? I mean, we expect he will sign with the Niners with a very high, reasonable number. But to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if they already had done it. But as you said, it's a kind of tactic. It is a bit strange, to be honest, because it's your cornerstone for the next years, the most important position in this kind of sports.
Yeah, it's very strange. And it's something where we all sort of speculated that maybe they would try and get it done earlier. Because the way these things work is if another quarterback gets paid, his price is only going to go up. That's just the nature mm-hmm. of these cycles. So wouldn't you want to get it done early? Avoid the Brandon Ayuk headache. And Brock Purdy is a quiet guy. He's not going to go on social media or do any of that. And maybe that's why they feel a little bit more comfortable giving it some time. But it could linger. It's something where it could get done in the next month and be very quiet. Or it could go into training camp and be very uncomfortable for everybody involved, because the Niners have a track record of saying, we're okay with being uncomfortable with these deals. So mm-hmm. I don't have a real gut feel either way, because the Niners are pretty tight-lipped and sometimes they get these things done quietly and it's no big deal. And sometimes it just lingers forever because they're trying to get the exact right price. And sometimes it's not worth getting the exact right price. It's worth getting your player in early and building goodwill, but that's not really how they viewed it.
Getting player early is maybe a good point or a good topic, because as we mentioned, guys like Debo Samuel are gone, Charvarius Ward, Aaron Banks is now with the Packers, and a few guys and experts also in the US say they already addressed that in the draft before, like in the last year, Ricky Pearsall or Renato Green. What is the feeling about these guys, and do you think they will also address exactly this needs in the draft, or do you think something else is coming for them? Because you said earlier the Niners have to be getting younger, or they are trying to do that.
Right. I think it's something where they really have spent money on three free agents, and that's Mac Jones and Luke Farrell, a backup tight mm-hmm. end, and DeMarcus Robinson, a third string wide receiver who, as Brandon Ayuk recovers, it's DeMarcus Robinson and Ricky Pearsall and Juwan Jennings. But they've left themselves a lot of needs. And you can have some needs going into the draft, but I think my concern and a lot of people's concern is that they've left too many spots unfilled. And so in the draft, ideally, you want to be drafting the best player you possibly can, regardless of position. And they might be in a spot where, I guess because they have so many needs, it could work out where they just draft the best player available. But you also are forced in a spot where you need to draft a defensive tackle, a defensive end, a linebacker. So from that perspective, I think they're leaving themselves a lot of needs to have to cover in a draft where I don't think you want to force yourself to have to do that all the time.
I mean, they have, I think, 11 picks now in the draft, some compensatory picks. They will do a lot for the defense. I think the offense is still, let's think about Brock Purdy signing a contract in whenever But I think the offense, it will work, hopefully, with a fit, available Christian McCaffrey. Defense, my stomach is a bit more grumbling about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think on offense, you look at it, and Aaron Banks, by the way, was not a good player last year, and he got 4 years and $77 mm-hmm. million. Dollars
a lot of
and,
money.
And Ben Bartsch is a guy that they re-signed, and he got injured, but in the basically the 1.5 games he played, he was better. So they replaced Aaron Banks for sort of free, and I would expect that they draft an interior offensive lineman to at least compete at that spot. They probably need another running back after trading Jordan Mason, which was an interesting deal, but they're addicted to draft picks, so I get it. But yeah, on defense,
that's like
their
me
defensive
on Madden
tackle,
at the PlayStation.
Honestly, that's exactly how I've compared it. Is
exactly
it's a very Madden offseason. But unlike in Madden, you can't simulate a season. The NFL is a brutal league, and you have to compete every year. You can't just take a year off like you could in sort of the NBA or some other leagues because, you know, guys, it's such a physical sport. So they have a lot of needs at defense. They need another linebacker next to Fred Warner. I don't think D. Winters is nearly good enough, and he's always injured, to be their number two. And they probably need a safety because Jair Brown hasn't been that good, and they don't have answers there. They probably need another corner. Their defensive tackle group is terrible, so they need at least a starter at defensive tackle, and they need a defensive end. So almost every single position on their defense, they need to draft players at.
Which is crazy. We talked about one of the best defenses in the recent years. Oh, that's tough, to be honest. Yeah. I didn't expect it this season. I mean, they lost a kind of Chevarius Ward. I didn't expect him to be back. Dre Greenlaw hurts. Hufanga hurts. It was for sure possible that you don't get back all the guys. It doesn't make sense, to be honest. But to lose more or less all?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dre Greenlaw is the one that's going to hurt them the most. And they could have probably matched the offer the Broncos had, and their rumblings that they were trying to negotiate with Dre Greenlaw even after he signed with the Broncos.
Yeah.
But given his Achilles history and his injury history, I don't necessarily blame them for moving on. But they also haven't signed anybody. You know, there were mid-tier free agents like Akeem Davis-Gaither is a random player who signed like a $4.5 million per year deal. I thought that's the sort of player where they have some sort of track record of being a second or third linebacker and playing pretty well. And you're not going to pay them top tier starter money, but at least you bring somebody experienced to compete. And they've not brought in anybody. They said, we're going to keep Dre Greenlaw, or we're going to just go with all these young linebackers they have. And none of them have really impressed much. So losing all of those veterans that we talk about, I think a lot of them were overpriced, and I don't blame them for moving on for most. But you would have thought that they would bring in, you know, some cheap veterans. There are cheap defensive tackles out there for $2 million that don't count into, you know, compensatory picks, which is something where you get money for players, you get draft picks for players who leave the following year. And they just haven't signed any of those guys. So you can be building and want younger players. And also, it's a little irresponsible, I think, to not fill some of these gaps with cheaper veterans, which they've seemed pretty reluctant to do so far.
And what is your feeling, or maybe the feeling in San Francisco or Santa Clara, regarding Kyle Shanahan with this, so to say, made rebuild they have to do now? Is there any concern? How do the fans see this? Is there optimistic or also a little bit of or more criticism, as you mentioned before?
It's setting up for an interesting thing where they have not had their, every GM and head coach before the draft, they have to talk to the media. They've not had their, some of these teams have held it, and they have to introduce all their new coaches and all these free agent signings, and they've been very slow to have their press conference so far. But I think what will be interesting is, if this is the plan, you sort of have to say, all right, this year's a little bit of a wash. We have to trust Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, unless the draft goes terribly, right? If the draft goes terribly, I could see John Lynch being in trouble with Jed York and ownership. But from Kyle Shanahan's perspective, if this is the team you're gonna force him to be with, you're not gonna let them really add serious free agents. You have to say, all right, this year, unless you go, you know, 3-13 or 3-14, whatever, unless you have a dreadful year, we're gonna give you at least one more year to let these younger guys come through the system and develop. before we're really evaluating you. But I don't know. You know, they've had a really good relationship with owner Jed York for the last 5 or 6 years, but it does seem like York is sort of clamping down. And so I'm interested to see, is this supposed to be a competitive team? Do they really think that they're actually going to compete? And I think they could make the playoffs with this roster. They still have, you know, some core pieces, especially on offense. But it's not a serious Super Bowl contender, and I do wonder what the expectations are from ownership.
But the Kyle Shanahan now has the chance to prove everybody again that he can be this mastermind to build a roster, because there were a lot of critics last season, of course. Of course, a lot of injuries and all that stuff, but maybe this is a chance also for him now. Yeah,
yeah. I think in an ideal world, as a head coach with a limited roster, I think Kevin O'Connell of the Vikings has done a very good job. They obviously have built up a pretty incredible roster now. And the Browns head coach, Kevin Stefanski, guys who have had some limitations and have built competitive rosters in spite of them. I think, yeah, it is something where you want to see, okay, what can Kyle Shanahan do with a roster that has some stars, some guys that are just replacement level, and some guys that might turn out to be great players but aren't quite there yet. And how can he coach them up, and how can he build a staff? And bringing defensive coordinator Robert Saleh back, I think, is from ownership. They paid him. I think he's the top paid defensive coordinator in the NFL now. So they're probably saying, all right, well, we brought you your defensive coordinator back. Who cares if these guys are young? You've got great coaches. Go do your job. Yeah, coach them up. Sure. Which is a little bit unfair, but also if you're going to pay these coaches top tier money, they should be able to get the best out of some younger and experienced guys. So I think it could be one of the weirder, more intriguing seasons, and they've had a lot of weird seasons, to be fair, but it could be really intriguing how it develops, and you know, they're betting basically everything on the draft working, and we'll see how that goes.
So to sum it up, Brock Purdy signing, great draft, really great draft, and Kyle Juszczyk is back as savior. And Robert Saleh is savior.
Yeah.
What a weird contract that was, cutting him and eating $3.5 million and then bringing him back for 2 years and $7 and $8 million. It didn't really make any. It felt like they were trying to save money and then they wanted him back, and they didn't really save any money in doing it. It was a very weird series of events.
Absolutely.
It's maybe a weird offseason for the Niners, but we will see what happens, because it's still the 49ers, still great players, great coaches. So we will see. The division is tough, but I mean, it's the Niners. We will see.
Yeah, I think they can compete for the division. The NFC is still wide open every single year. Yeah. So I could see them, you know, competing for a playoff spot. I just can't fathom them competing for a Super Bowl. They haven't replaced any of their key spots, and they had one good draft last year, and the 3 years before that, they were pretty terrible. Yeah. So it's a pretty optimistic approach.
Yeah.
So we will see what happens for the Niners. Jake, thank you very much again for your time. Was very interesting to hear from San Francisco, from the Bay Area. Looking forward. Maybe we get surprised all together.
Maybe. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me back on. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Ja, die Niners definitiv, bleibe ich dabei, eine der spannendsten Off-Seasons, weil wir, glaube ich, immer noch nicht wissen, was passiert. Purdy noch nicht unterschrieben. Und ganz spannend, weil Jake ja auch die Rams angesprochen hat, 2023. Damals haben die davon gesprochen, it's not a rebuild, it's a remodel. Ja. Ich glaube, das passt zu den Niners eigentlich, weil Rebuild fühle ich auch noch nicht wirklich.
Ja, das stimmt.
Weiß nicht, ob es ein Remodel ist, aber...
Was ist ein Remodel? Naja, gut. Kann man sehen, wie man will. Aber Rams ist das Stichwort zum nächsten Thema, denn wir bleiben in der Division und wir bleiben auch irgendwie bei den Rams. Es gibt News, die schon ein paar Tage alt sind, aber Cooper Kupp, der von den Rams entlassen wurde, hat ein neues Team gefunden und geht zum Divisionsrivalen, zu den Seattle Seahawks, die ja Wide Receiver brauchten und haben den Veteranen jetzt verpflichtet. Also die Spiele werden sehr, sehr interessant, und mit dieser News wollen wir reingehen.
Aber vor allem nicht billig, also 3 Jahre 45 Millionen, hast du es gerade gesagt? Nee, nicht, oder?
Nee, habe ich noch nicht gesagt, ja.
3 Jahre 45 Millionen fand ich jetzt gar nicht so wenig. Also er hat immer gesprochen, dass er so um die 15 will. Die Seahawks geben es ihm, und mit Jackson Smith und Jigba, geiles Slot-Duo aber.
Ja, absolut richtig. Und was ich auch spannend fand bei dieser jetzt dann offiziellen Bekanntgabe auch seitens der Seahawks, hat er auch ganz klar nochmal gesagt, die Kritiker haben mich in den letzten 2 Jahren irgendwie ein bisschen zu schlecht gesehen. Klar war ich auch verletzt und klar habe ich vielleicht auch nicht so gut gespielt, aber ich will schon nochmal zeigen, dass ich diese High-Value Wide Receiver sein kann, wie er eben auch bei den Rams, Stichwort Super Bowl, vor einigen Jahren, mittlerweile 4 oder Christoph würde sagen 3 Jahren der Fall gewesen ist. Und ich bin da sehr gespannt, wie der da reinpasst. Und es ist auch so eine Homecoming-Story, kommt ja aus dem State Washington, also da passt irgendwie alles zusammen. Er kriegt seine Kohle, er will also allen nochmal beweisen, ist ja auch nicht mehr der Jüngste. Und mal gucken, wie es dann so werden wird.
Ich weiß gar nicht, was angesprochen hat, aber auf Edge haben sie noch den Marcus Lawrence geholt von Dallas. Ja. 3 Jahre 42 Millionen, da sind 18 garantiert. Der wird jetzt im April 33 Jahre alt, ist jetzt nicht mehr der Jüngste, aber natürlich schon eigentlich ein guter. Letztes Jahr aber nur 4 Spiele gemacht wegen einer Verletzung. Finde ich trotzdem tatsächlich eigentlich spannend für diese Defensive, die ja schon sehr, sehr gut ausschaut. Wir sprechen jetzt mit Brady Henderson von ESPN, also Seahawks-Reporter für ESPN. Da geht es vor allem, kann man glaube ich schon mal sagen, natürlich um die Offense. Sind auch ein paar Zahlen jetzt rausgekommen zu Sam Darnold, seinem Vertrag. Diese 3 Jahre, 100,5 Millionen, wo man nach einem Jahr relativ gut rauskommen kann. 2025 bekommt er 37,5 Millionen, alles garantiert. Und dann kann man eben danach relativ einfach rauskommen aus dem Vertrag. Also es schaut alles deutlich besser aus, als noch ich das fand vor ein paar Tagen, Wochen. Ja, gehen wir einfach ins Gespräch rein, würde ich sagen, oder?
Ja, das machen wir jetzt auch. Brady Henderson von ESPN ist mit am Start.
So, now with the maybe most exciting team in the offseason, Brady Henderson. Brady, thanks very much for your time. Are the Seahawks, okay, for you, the answer has to be yes, but it looks like the most exciting offseason team, the Seahawks. There happened so much.
Yeah, they've got to be up there in terms of the most intriguing teams. They've definitely had one of the busiest off seasons of any team in the NFL. Anytime you trade your starting quarterback, that's a pretty good start to an eventful offseason. But not only did they do that, they traded their star receiver in DK Metcalf. They cut another very productive franchise legend at wide receiver in Tyler Lockett. And, haven't made a ton of huge splashes in free agency outside of obviously signing Sam Darnold to the 3-year $100.5 million contract. But this is a team that has some star power and, I would say some question marks in there as well. I mean, we've got to see if Sam Darnold can, recapture the magic that he had, last season with the Vikings under Kevin O'Connell. But this is going to be a very intriguing team. And the narrative has been that, because they've moved on from all these star players, that the assumption has kind of been that they're rebuilding. And I guess that really depends on how you define the term rebuilding. They are rebuilding in the sense that their roster is going to look quite a bit different next year. But they're not rebuilding in the sense that they're willingly taking one step back in order to try to take 2 steps forward. So they're trying to win next season, make no mistake about it.
Yeah, of course. And they started the rebuild, especially on the defense side, mid-season last year, so to say, with the linebacker positions and all that stuff. But maybe my question would be, how did this rebuild now in the offseason came up? Was this a plan in the second year of Mike McDonald as head coach, or where the teams were interested, like Pete Carroll from the Raiders, in your quarterback? Did the wide receiver DK Metcalf came and said he wants to do something different? Because, as you said, these are your franchise faces from the offense, and now they're gone suddenly. Was this planned, or is this something who is coming up in the maybe in the winter?
For me, it was a big shock. I was hanging on Twitter and couldn't believe what happened. To be honest,
I would say neither of those were their plan A. And certainly they went into this offseason not planning on trading DK Metcalf. That was something that came up, over a series of conversations, as I understand it, with the general manager. And DK Metcalf was unhappy in Seattle for reasons that aren't still entirely clear. And the Seahawks decided that, between his unhappiness and wanting to be out, plus the fact that they would have had to give him a massive new contract. You saw the numbers on the deal that he got in Pittsburgh. I think it's a $35 million year average. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the inherent risk in giving that kind of money on a third contract to a receiver, they also knew that, if he didn't want to be there, that was not going to be a great marriage. And so, but that wasn't something that they planned on this offseason. That kind of came up, closer to free agency. The Geno Smith trade, it was a little bit different because on one hand, their plan A, if you will, was to extend him. And they offered him a contract extension after the combine. And from what I understand, it was a 2-year, $70 million extension that would have paid him $40 million in year one. So they felt like that was a strong offer. I think they knew all along that just given the history, that, you know, there was a chance that the negotiations wouldn't go well. Geno Smith, from what I know, was pretty unhappy about his contract situation last offseason. And the bottom line is, you know, they obviously liked Geno Smith enough to offer him that extension. Mm-hmm. But I think the entire organization had, I would say, you know, some reservations about his viability as their long-term answer. And they liked him. I don't think they necessarily loved him, liked him enough to offer him a lot of money, but I would say didn't love him enough to offer him more money on a longer-term extension with more money guaranteed. So I think in the back of their minds, while it was plan A to extend Geno Smith, you know, they knew they were only going to go so high, and they knew that there was a possibility that, you know, negotiations just wouldn't result in a deal, and they knew that they would have to pivot, and that's why they were as ready as they were to pivot to Sam Darnold, because, you know, they had had a, you know, some contingency plans in mind.
So they do love Sam Darnold now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say it's kind of the same thing, you know, if the full numbers of his contract haven't come out yet.
Sure.
But, you know, they are paying Sam Darnold, you know, less than what I think Geno Smith would have wanted. And I would guess, just based on their contract history and also some of the numbers that have gotten out, that, you know, that deal is going to be structured similarly to Geno Smith's last deal, which is sort of the way that they structure deals, which it would give them an opportunity to get out of the contract after one season if Sam Darnold were to, you know, suddenly regress to the kind of quarterback that he was over his first six seasons compared to what he was last year in Minnesota. So I would say that, yeah, they are very intrigued by Sam Darnold, but the contract that they gave him, I don't think that's going to be necessary. It's a three-year deal for a good amount of money, but I don't necessarily think it's going to be a three-year commitment. I think it's going to be kind of like what it was with Geno Smith. It was a contract that it gives them the ability to go year to year.
Mm-hmm. So, but Geno, the trade, as I can hear, it's all about the money. Or did there happen something we weren't aware of? Because that was a real shocker for myself, to be honest, that Geno is gone, because he was that kind of, last year, if you watched the Seahawks games, he was the guy who who made it realistic for them to win games. Or was it also, as you said, plan B? There are some other quarterbacks. If it doesn't work with Geno, we can take Sam Darnold, we can take Aaron Rodgers, so that they could do that kind of offer, which is a very good offer, I would say.
Yeah, it was, I think, again, it just came down to the fact that they were kind of lukewarm on Geno Smith and him being the long-term answer at quarterback. And that was between the fact that his play has been up and down the last few seasons. And granted, you know, any time you talk about Geno Smith, the way he played last season, there were the interceptions, the 15 interceptions, including, you know, the four that came in the red zone, some kind of backbreaking mistakes that he made. But he also, I would say, he carried an offense that really didn't have a great offensive line, didn't have much of a run game. So it's all, you know, in the, it's kind of hard to evaluate Geno Smith's season, but I think the bottom line is, regardless of how observers see his season, the Seahawks didn't think enough of it to say that, yeah, this is definitely, you know, the long-term answer at the position. And there was, you know, there was factors in there beyond his play. There's also the fact that he's 34 years old. And there's also the fact that, you know, there were some questions inside the organization about his leadership and about, you know, how his temperament, and Pete Carroll had gone on record as saying that Geno Smith was a hothead. That was the word that Pete Carroll used, a hothead, meaning he's a very fiery, temperamental guy who sometimes loses his cool in the heat of the moment. Geno Smith himself has talked about that. Mike McDonald talked last offseason about wanting Geno Smith to take the next step as a leader. And that next step, in his words, was basically being more poised in the heat of the moment. So that was the on-the-record stuff. The stuff that I've heard behind the scenes is that, you know, that temperament, that fiery nature, sometimes worked against him in terms of his play and also in terms of developing relationships with teammates. And so there were, it's fair to say, some leadership questions that the organization had about Geno Smith, in addition to the up and down play on the field.
Because if it would be so easy to sign him, he would have signed with the Raiders. When we record, I didn't hear about a new contract with the Raiders for Geno Smith, which is also a bit, let's say, interesting. I expected it a bit earlier, or that it's already done, the extension with the Raiders. So something maybe is there. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. I would have thought that that he would have gotten a new deal sometime before March 16th. That was when he had a $16 million roster bonus due in his contract. So they could still get a deal done. That typically roster bonuses serve as soft deadlines for teams to get something done like that. So I still would imagine that something would get done. But yeah, to your point, Christoph, I also would have thought that it would have happened by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. And you mentioned like the emotional Geno Smith. I can remember, I think it was in two games where he was sitting on the sideline, not crying, but looking really sad and emotional. With this being said, again, is Sam Darnold, for the opinion in the franchise, maybe of course, but also fan-wise and all the guys around there in Seattle, the better leader and the maybe not that emotional guy to bring more success? Or other question, is he the better quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks then?
Yeah, in terms of that stuff that we're talking about with Geno Smith, kind of the handling emotions, you know, I'm still learning more about Sam Darnold. I hadn't, you know, obviously hadn't followed him as closely as I'd followed Geno Smith. So I'm still learning about him. But I have heard that, you know, there is, you know, the Seahawks are high on his leadership. And, you know, he is kind of a lower key guy. And if you go back and watch, if you remember late last season, I think it was it was a late season win that the Vikings had over the Packers. There is this great scene where Sam Darnold comes into the locker room because he had to do some on-field interviews, and Vikings players just went crazy celebrating him. And it was a big kind of milestone win for him. And, you know, you could just kind of see there in that moment what his Vikings teammates thought of him and how much they admired his comeback story. So not that you can judge an entire quarterback's leadership capabilities off one clip like that, but it does seem like, just from what I've heard, that was a pretty good representation of how his teammates with the Vikings felt about him.
He's familiar with the Clint Kubiak system that is, I guess, helpful for the Seahawks sports-wise. On the other hand, there had been, I think it's not official what the contract looks like, but there is the option to go out of this contract after 1 year with, I would say, a reasonable out for the Seahawks. So there's not so much risk, I would say. I expected it to be more risk for the Seahawks, but as it looks like now, it's not so much risk for the Seahawks.
Right. That is kind of some of the early numbers that have gotten out. Well, we still haven't seen the full breakdown of the contract with every single detail, but from what it sounds like, yeah, the Seahawks would be able to get out of that contract after 1 year, and I think it was $37.5 million.
Yep.
And just based on the early reporting of the contract, I think it's a $35.5 million average. So it basically would be, you know, one season at the going rate of that contract that they could get out of it. So again, that's typically how the Seahawks structure their contracts. They don't fully guarantee money beyond the first year of a deal. So while, you know, this deal might have $55 million guaranteed, it's $37.5 million fully guaranteed in year one. And then the remainder of that $55 million is basically in injury guarantees. So if Sam Darnold were to get injured this year, couldn't pass a physical, he would be entitled to the remainder of that money, the what is it, $18 million. But if he's not injured, the Seahawks could still move on and not have to pay him the rest of that $55 million because it's only guaranteed for injury.
Yeah, it's interesting. But for this season now, I mean, we have also Cooper Kupp, like the homecoming story, so to say, from Washington. What do you expect from this offense then, with Sam Darnold on the center, with the Cooper Kupp and no more Lockett, no more DK Metcalf? Do you think there is a different scheme coming up in the offense from Mike McDonald and, of course, Clint Kubiak? Or is it again like they're trying to run, but it wasn't that good in the season, so they always laid on the passing game? What do you expect for the offense in the next season or the upcoming season?
Yeah, they are going to run the ball a lot more. And that was a big issue for them last season, really, when Mike McDonald was interviewing Ryan Grubb to potentially be the offensive coordinator last season. That was a big concern of Mike McDonald's, just because Ryan Grubb's history as a play caller, at least his recent history, you know, he was very pass heavy, and he was able to convince Mike McDonald that he would run the ball. And as we all saw, he didn't really run the ball. And so that put a lot of strain on the offensive line, and the offensive line is still a big question mark here, but the feeling is certainly they're going to address that position in the draft, and they're not going to roll out, you know, the same guys that they had last season. They already, you know, let one of those starters, Laken Tomlinson, leave in free agency. I would anticipate them spending a high pick on an offensive lineman. I would anticipate them, you know, spending a little bit amount of money on a veteran player to come in as maybe not necessarily as a surefire starter, but somebody to come in and, you know, at least compete for a starting job. But they're going to also count on some of their young guys like Christian Haynes to continue to develop. And the thought is that I don't think that they would necessarily argue with the fact that they weren't as talented as some other offensive lines, but they also would tell you, the Seahawks people that I've spoken with really believe that the scheme and the play calling last year really did not set up their offensive line for success. For example, for the first half of the season, they were in shotgun a lot. They were one of the most shotgun heavy offenses in the NFL. And as an offensive lineman, you know, that kind of makes life hard, because when a defensive lineman, a pass rusher, sees the quarterback lined up in shotgun, he is not quite as worried about the threat of a run. You could still run at a shotgun, but it's a lot more likely that you're going to pass. And so when the Seahawks were in, you know, as much shotgun as they were and already throwing the ball as much as they were, you know, that really put a strain on their offensive linemen. Those guys really like to run. Those guys like to run because it can then slow down pass rushers. And between all the passing they were doing last season and between all the shotgun they were running those passing plays out of, the thought in the organization is that it really made life hard on the offensive line. So this new scheme, they think, is going to help the offensive linemen out in that regard. So between the new scheme, developing younger players, and maybe finding a big time upgrade in the draft, I think there is hope that the offensive line can be better than it was last season.
I mean, the O-line had to be better, because I just opened the ESPN depth chart of the Seahawks. There isn't a left guard at the moment. I don't think they play with four guys.
Right. It could be either of you guys. If I don't know how good you are at blocking, but who knows?
I mean, the O-line wasn't good, but it will be drastically fall bottom of the standings with us in the O-line. But is this the biggest need in the draft now? Because the tackle position is, I would say, fine. Depends on Lucas how available he will be, but it should be fine on paper. Interior line, there are maybe three holes. I don't know.
Yeah, that's still the question. Now, they do have, you know, a couple younger players, like I mentioned, that they're still high on. One being Christian Haynes, who was the third round pick last year, and you know, they felt like, or they feel like, according to people I've spoken with, they feel like this new scheme with the outside zone blocking, you know, that kind of scheme, it really prioritizes guys who are quicker, guys who can run. And they feel like that scheme is going to, you know, play to his strengths better than, you know, what they were asking their offensive linemen to do last season. But I would still anticipate them spending at least one, if not, you know, two or three draft picks on offensive linemen. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if their first pick in the draft, whether it's at number 18 or whether they trade back to, you know, sometime later in the first round or maybe even the early second round, it wouldn't surprise me if they spend a high draft pick on an offensive lineman to come in and start right away. But again, the important thing to know is, you know, they still have confidence in some of those younger players, whether it's Christian Haynes, Satawa Laumea, Olu Oluwatimi, who of course took over at center in the second half of last season after Connor Williams retired. So I don't think they're going to have three new starters on their offensive line. I would anticipate, whether it's Olu Oluwatimi or Christian Haynes or Satawa Laumea, I would anticipate that one of those guys is going to be starting next season.
Because this is interesting. I had a list with holes, with needs from the Seahawks, and quarterback, we can pencil it out. Cooper Kupp, we can discuss if he's better of than Metcalf, but I think it works with the scheme. It's fine. But the biggest need is the offensive line, because we didn't mention the defense so far, because the defense will probably rock.
should rock.
It should. Yeah. And I think there's still some depth pieces that, you know, that they would like to add there. And again, you know, when we're talking about the draft, you know, it's easy to get caught up in, okay, well, this is their biggest need. So this is, they're going to draft this position here. You know, they really, over the last few years, yeah, they have really kind of shifted their focus and really stayed more true to the idea of you draft the best player as opposed to drafting for a need. So I'll give you an example here. Let's say if the safety from South Carolina, I'm going to butcher his name because it's hard to pronounce, but Nick Emanwori, I think is how you pronounce it. He's the guy who totally lit up the combine, ran a 4.38 and jumped out of the gym and just, it looks like an athletic marvel. You know, if he's sitting there for them at 18, or maybe if they trade back late in the first round, I could absolutely see them drafting him, even though safety is not necessarily their big need. I mean, Kobe Bryant, he played well enough to take Rayshon Jenkins' starting job last season, but I don't think he played well enough to say he's absolutely going to be penciled into the starting job and that they shouldn't even, you know, look for an upgrade. So I think, you know, the safety from South Carolina is probably a good example of that's a player I could see them taking, but that wouldn't be for need. That would just be, he's the best player available at that
absolutely
time.
Yeah, makes sense as well.
But do you think, or are there any rumors, because correct me if I'm wrong, the Seahawks have 2 second-rounders and 2 third-rounders as well. So actually they could easily go up. Of course, it depends how the first 10 to 12 picks maybe will go, or how the draft develops in a whole. But do you think they could go up with this cap picks they've got, so they have to go for the maybe best player or also the need?
Yeah, that is a good point. And the maneuvering that we've seen them do over the years in the draft, it's more often than not, it's been to move back. But they have traded up, you know, a handful of times. Remember, they traded up famously to the last pick of the second round in 2019 to take DK Metcalf. And there's been other trade-up scenarios. I don't recall a time where they've traded up in the first round. You know, it does get more expensive to do that in terms of the draft capital that you have to give up. It gets more expensive to move up in the first round. Yeah. But to your point, yeah, they do have the 2 second-round picks, the 2 third-round picks. You know, they got an extra pick in each of those rounds from the Geno Smith and the DK Metcalf trades. And so, yeah, if there's a player sitting there at, you know, 15, maybe a stud offensive lineman that they really love and that they feel like wouldn't last till 18, yeah, maybe they do trade up.
Maybe a quick last question, because the division, there is so much going on in this division. The Rams, I would say, look still strong. For now, I would still say the Seahawks look strong. It's a bit a different opinion I had maybe a few weeks ago. So are the Seahawks, the Rams, from your perspective, still the best teams in this division? Niners, we talked a few minutes before. Interesting to see what's happening. Arizona, they did some things with Josh Sweat, for example, but I would say the Rams, the Seahawks, are still the best teams in the division so far.
So far, yeah. And the Rams, you know, they did get Matthew Stafford back when it looked like he, you know, could maybe be playing elsewhere next season. They haven't done a ton in free agency aside from that. So we'll see what they do in the draft. But yeah, I would say, you know, just kind of based off of last season, not that teams always pick up where they left off, but just based on last season, based on how the 49ers have sort of had to clean house a lot with, you know, a lot of players who are making some money just to kind of get their finances in order. I could see it being hard for them to come back. They're also going to have to pay Brock Purdy a huge contract this offseason, which is going to limit their ability to, you know, spend on other players. And so, yeah, I would say it's still very much, you know, it's the Rams and the Seahawks at the top of the division. And boy, those Rams-Seahawks games are going to be fun next season. Oh, yeah. I mean, they always are, but now with the Cooper Cup connection there, I think that'll add a little element to it.
Oh, wow.
So now I have really the last question, because I'm trying to, when you have guests from the US and also near the franchises, I try to soak in the energy and the atmosphere around the franchise, because we talked about it, franchise legend for 10 years, Tyler Lockett is gone. You got 2 of your best players gone in the offense. Of course, you get good players in the defense, DeMarcus Lawrence, Cooper Kupp, a veteran guy. How is the opinion from the fans and maybe all around them at the Seattle Seahawks with this moves in free agency and this new faces, especially the offense?
Well, just from what I have gathered, just reading Twitter every day and you know, talking to people, I think there's mixed feelings about the Geno Smith trade because there were so many mixed feelings about Geno Smith. I mean, he was, I'm sure you guys saw a little bit of this.
Yeah.
He was a very polarizing player among Seahawks fans. And, you know, some of that is just, I think, kind of the nature of how a lot of people view sports nowadays. And unfortunately, the way that people get labeled it's an extreme way of looking at it, right? You're either the GOAT or you're trash. And we don't leave enough room for all that space in between. And so I think because of that, because Geno was a very polarizing player, you know, there's been some strong opinions on both sides. But, you know, I think that the Seahawks, if any team, you know, deserves the benefit of the doubt that, you know, they can pull off kind of a retooling like this, it's them. Just because if you remember in 2018, they did this. They moved on from, you know, Richard Sherman. They lost Cam Chancellor. They traded Michael Bennett. And everybody thought that was going to be a rebuilding year. And, you know, they made the playoffs as a wild card team. Same thing happened in 2022. Remember, they traded Russell Wilson, cut Bobby Wagner. Everybody thought it was going to be a rebuilding year. And, you know, they went 9-8 and made the playoffs as a wild card. So that's not to say that they're all of a sudden going to be headed to the Super Bowl this year. But
the Seahawks are coming.
Yeah, right. I'm not predicting a Super Bowl by any means this year, but I would say that, you know, there is some credibility to the idea that they are, you know, their rebuild is more of a retool, and that they still feel like they're going to be a pretty competitive team this season.
All right.
So we'll see. Brady, thank you very much. It was a bit longer than I told you,
but that's all right. I had fun doing it.
Interesting this year. I think it's the most interesting team this season.
Also Christoph hat es ja vorhin schon bei den Niners gesagt, hier ist es aber echt so, die Seattle Seahawks vielleicht das spannendste Team gewesen in der Offseason mit den Schocker-Nachrichten und mit vielen, vielen Dingen, die da vor sich gehen. Vielen Dank nochmal an alle drei Jungs, an Christopher Price, bei den Patriots ja klar, bei dem Namen, Jake Hutchinson und auch Brady Henderson.
Heiß.
Ja, ganz genau. Also vielen lieben Dank dafür, immer sehr, sehr spannend. Wir werden es auch in der nächsten Woche versuchen, mit dem einen oder anderen zu sprechen, das sei schon mal gesagt, aber heute, das war... Ich sag's zwar, ich habe es zwar neulich erst gesagt, aber wieder mal eine der spannendsten Folgen bei uns hier. Also
tolle
stay tuned für die nächste.
So mehr will ich gar nicht sagen.
Ja. Okay, dann machen wir Schluss für heute. Danke, Christoph.
Nein, tschüss. Ciao, sage ich noch. Ciao.